They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that doesn't need a runestone to tell us about the past. Got a robot that swears he was there. This is Hysteria 51.
Though that is true, I can't help but think that was meant as a dig. Therefore, go fuck yourself with a cactus. Respectfully.
Why did you say respectfully at the end?
If you say respectfully at the end, then they can't get mad at you. You would know that if you weren't such an idiot. Respectfully.
My cheese muffins don't think that's how that cheese muffins.
Yeah, he's right. It's not.
Well, you can respectfully suck
my... Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago, I'm your host and lead rune investigator this week. My name is Brent Hand. Alongside, as always, our conspiracy bind, Kyle. Seba was made to help with the show, and well, you can see how that turned out. Kyle is his creation, who somehow has more common sense than his creator.
I know how that feels.
Returning triumphantly, I might say, to pole co-host duties is none other than Mr. Daryl Montgomery. Daryl!
What's up, guys? I'm glad to be back to the nation, lower fourth ward.
You're not just here as a guest, you're helping me co-host this week. You're moving on up.
Yeah.
Fish don't fry and beans and all that stuff.
Big shoes to fill with John being on.
He only wears a size 7 women's. I don't know if you know that or not. He's like 6'1". I don't know what that means. It's just an observation. I also just made it up, so you can take that as you will. So what's going on, man? How's life treating you?
Oh, everything's good on my end. You know, starting out the new year, everyone in the family's healthy. That's all we can ask for. How about yourself?
I have been battling a cold for like 10 days now. It's not COVID. Got tested.
Yep.
But yeah, man. So good for you guys. I've been getting my butt kicked.
Yeah, we're trying to stay away from people. You know, my family members caught COVID right before Christmas, on Christmas Eve, and so we did not see anybody.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, sometimes I'm envious of that. Sometimes during the year, you end up seeing everyone, and
it was actually pretty nice to be a little kind of low-key and chill. You know, I had a lot of extra food that left over because nobody showed up.
We did that, too. Ours was a very low key, and we still cooked like we were going to feed an army, and ate as much as I could until I didn't want to look at it anymore.
same here.
Somehow the desserts got ate, though. I don't know how that happens, but they all
magically disappears.
I also noticed now, when you first came on, your beard is looking as majestic as always. If anyone doesn't know, he has a very majestic beard. I don't know if that's the word I should use, but that's the one that I'm going with.
Hey, I like it. I appreciate it. I actually trimmed off probably about 3 inches.
Wow.
Not too long ago.
Well, there you go. It's new year, new you.
Right. I cut all my hair off right before the pandemic happened. It was down to my elbow, and now it's back down to my shoulder.
Holy heck. Wow.
But getting back to normal.
That is some hair, man. How long did it take you to grow that long? Like
about 2 years.
Yeah, that's pretty fast, though, really. I mean, you got some growth.
Yeah, it runs in my family. My brother's same way, long hair, big beard. My mom actually paid for a ancestry DNA kit one time for us. Come to find out, we have, 34% Scandinavian in our...
No, so it's just beards and drinking out of horns at all events and everything with your family. Yep.
Scottish and Viking. That's what it was.
I tell you what, then you picked the right thing, because we're talking runestones this week and Scandinavian stuff. This was your pick. What was the draw? Was there anything specific, or are you just like, I've heard of this? Let's dive into it and figure it out.
Basically, I've heard of it. I think first time I heard about it was, I don't know, maybe about 8 years ago, 2014 or something, 2012. I can't remember. But off, I believe it was the History Channel show, America Unearthed, with that Scott Walter guy or whatever. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting one. And you're going to find out, listeners, as we go through this, it's one that the guy's like, it's real. And everyone's like, it is not. Then they're like, maybe. Then it is not. Then maybe. It was just an interesting how everyone, or how these things kind of go through these ebbs and flow of people don't think about them, and then something happens and they start talking about them again, and new scholars look at them. We're going to break this down, but we'll get you started. Picture, if you will, the year of our Lord, 1898. Hell of a time to be a Minnesotan, but that's where we're going. You're a farmer. You're just trying to make your way. Your name is Olaf Oman. So Scandinavian, to say the least. Just a Swedish, Scandinavian heritage. It was strong in this area, and we're going to find that out. But Swedish immigrant, just trying to take out some trees so you can get some land to plow, is what he said. And hard row to hoe, so to speak, because this was when, when you needed a field, then you went out and made it.
Right.
You know, it's not like every year now where they just replant and plant. You ever been anything to do with farming or anything like that?
When I was little, my grandparents had a farm in West Virginia.
I grew up in Central Illinois. It's all farming. You know what I mean? And
my wife is from Milwaukee, so we drive through there all the time.
Yeah, well, Minnesota's a place that they decided to make home, and there was because there was a ton of Swedish and people from Sweden, people from Norway in the area, and the latter still being a part of Sweden at the time. So Norway was a part of Sweden. I didn't realize this until 1905.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not until I started doing research on this.
Yeah, and I guess there was a lot of like bad blood for a while. I was asleep during the that part of history when they talked about that, because I had no idea.
Yeah, I am a history buff. I'm actually in college right now to get my anthropology degree. I would like to be an archaeologist, and so this was all new to me too, learning about this.
Dude, you are a lasso and a hat away. You know, you got the beard already. I'm ready. You know, you need that Giorgio Tsoukalos starter kit. He's got the Indiana Jones wannabe look going on.
I know, right? I just got to get the necklace, get my hair all froed out. We're good to go.
Picture, if you will.
Could it be?
Could it be? Yeah. So yeah, there you are. Late 1800s, almost 1900. You're an immigrant. You're here. You're trying to make your way. You're plowing, you know, so trying to make some fields. So a plow and you go until you spot something sticking out of the ground from a small knoll near some wetlands.
Grassy knolls. Gotta love them.
That is true. They have been pretty good to this this year's start. We've had a lot of things that took place on knolls, or assassins or would-be assassins taking pop shots from knolls. So yeah, we can't, you know, speaking of knolls, have you been to Dallas to see where the assassination of JFK
took place? I actually have. We were out there probably about 5 years ago.
You know, they've got the X on the road.
Yep.
And then they have the grassy knoll. Was the grassy knoll what you expected, or way smaller?
It was way, way smaller.
It's just a little bitty piece of grass. Like, I was expecting like a field.
My thought was like, how can somebody really hide up in that thing and get away with it?
Yeah, it was weird. It was just, I guess that goes with a lot of things. You know, your expectation mm-hmm. and then reality are different. But I was not prepared for it to be so small.
Right. And I was blown away with all the panhandlers, but people walking around trying to sell you stuff around.
Hey, here, give me a dollar. I'll tell you what really happened.
I have the book. Yeah. I wrote this book, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, grassy knolls, but surprise, well, sticking out of this is something.
The Second Book of Mormon.
Not quite. Hey. Sometimes you gotta go digging in the ground and find things. But it was a runestone. Now, runestones or stones, stuff like that, that's not exactly unheard of. More specifically, though, on this one, it was a slab of Greywick stone with inscriptions that were, now here's the air quotes, said to be a record left behind by Scandinavian explorers in the 14th century. That is a heck of a find, or a hoax. That's what we're talking about this week, because a lot of people are like, not so fast. It's a weird, just a way for this guy to try to drum up some attention. That's the short and the sweet of it. There wasn't a huge, it was, hey, I found something. And then all of the stuff that happened kind of happened afterwards with the push back and forth of what, it wasn't like this guy was abducted and then they gave him a runestone. No, he said he was out plowing and he saw it sticking out of the ground.
Been a lot cooler.
Yeah. So Daryl, that's what we're exploring this week on Hysteria 51. Now we're going to go to break real quick, but when we come back, we're talking more Rocky shenanigans and why some scholars say it's forgery and some scholars say not so fast. We're going to break that down As best that we can here on Hysteria 51.
We got all the answers.
Yeah. Now, I don't know that they're true. Remember, it says the truth is out there, but you won't find it here.
That's right.
Hola, David. Me llamo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
That's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Bum-bum. So I gotta tell you, we're moving to a new studio. I've just got my keys, signed a lease on a new studio, and it's not ready yet. As of recording date, internet is getting installed tomorrow, so it's just a big empty room. And I'm in my attic, and I guess it's not as sealed up, or I had the air off, because I am freezing my ass off right now.
I wish I could say I was freezing down here, but we're like in the 50s, I believe, today in
Georgia. Now, where are you at in Georgia?
Marietta, right outside of Atlanta.
That's pretty nice. And that's awesome weather. We are 20, I think it said, and it was snowing earlier. It's not snowing anymore, but we've got a couple inches that have just been here for a while. It's all that packed down, dirty, nasty snow now.
Yep. I'm jealous of the snow, though. We almost jumped in the car over Thursday and drove to Colorado, but decided against it.
That's a drive.
two days with a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old and a dog.
Oh, man. So you are which one is the sadist and which is the masochist? Because that is if you told me a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, or a dog, any of them, I'd be like, yikes.
Yeah, well, the dog is also 5, too, so they're all the same age.
they're best friends and mortal enemies.
Yeah. A 70-pound Dutch Shepherd.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's awesome. I'm a dog man. We've got a mixed mutts, but I've got a pit boxer, which sounds funny. It sounds like a man. He's a pit boxer. Yeah, sounds like he trained. And then we have an English bulldog staffy mix, which is a pit too. Like, and nice. he's a weird looking one, but
yeah, I've seen them on Facebook on the
all the time.
I'm good looking dogs.
Not as cool as Viking runestones though.
Nope.
Minnesota is a place you ought to be if you expect to find those, or at least so says our hero Olaf in this story. As far as runestones go too, this one is not that small. How big was it?
30 by 16 by 6 inches in size and weighed 202 pounds, 92 kilograms if you're in Europe.
Yeah, that's a big old slab, man. That would take some digging out and maneuvering at a time when you don't really have a backhoe to come pick it up.
Go get the ox.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So 92 kilograms, 202 pounds. That's heavier than half the people listen to this probably.
I'm getting close to it.
So Olaf said again that he discovered this back in 1898, almost in 1998, in this mostly rural township of Salem. That's in Douglas County, Minnesota, and it's named after the nearest settlement, Kensington. So he's like, it's the Kensington stone. That's what they named it after. Boom, we got a name. And he said that he thought he had found at the time an Indian almanac.
If you place a picture side by side of
the Kensington runestone
and the Aztec calendar, there's an eerie similarity between the two.
Thank you, Steven. Yes, Giorgio, it is uncanny. Not quite, but I applaud the effort. What the hell is an Indian almanac? What is that? What comes to mind when you hear that?
The first thing I think of is like they're like trying to dictate the season, not dictate, but like map out when things are going to happen. We're going to grow our corn or maize.
Maybe something like you hold this to the sky at the equinox and it tells you, you know, or whatever.
Right. With the winter solstice.
For backwoods or country is or whatever you want to call it, as untechnical as we see a lot of these people, man, they had a pretty good grasp on season changes and calendars and things when I can't remember the day of the week and it's on my phone.
All right. It's on my arm.
I'll open my phone to see what time it is and then forget to look and see what time it was and put it down. And then I got to go pick it up. I didn't look.
Dude, that happens to me like 3 or 4 times a day. Like, no lie. I get so distracted.
I was seeing something the other day. Some people like, you know, no one ever dreams with phones on. I dream about my phone all the time. The other night I dreamt that I couldn't turn so I use the flashlight on my phone all the time. I dreamt that I couldn't turn it off and we were in a theater and it was like coming through my pants and too bright. And they're like going to kick me out. And like, we never go to the theater. That's just a dumb thing. You turn it over, wouldn't happen. The brain is weird. And then you go to like a psychologist and they're like, oh, that's because you have unfiltered issues with your uncle. Like, what?
I get that from my wife. She's a therapist.
Exactly.
Right.
So like, do you know why you didn't take out the trash? Because I'm lazy. Nope. Right. That's not it.
Your dad spanked you when you were too hard when you were 8.
All right. Yeah. This runestone, the reason we're talking is it's got an inscription on it. Tell us a little bit about the inscription, if you will.
Yeah. So it consists of 9 lines on the face of the stone and 3 lines on the edge.
And ooh. Then
I'm going to try my best to do this. There's a couple words on here. Eight gates, and which is what I would assume is
Scandinavian Sweden, people. Right? That's what Scandinavian people. That's what that means.
Yep. And 22 Norwegians on an exploration journey from Vinland, which means North America, to the West. We had a camp by two skerries, one day's journey north from this stone. We were out to fish one day after we came home. We found 10 men, red of blood and dead. Ava, Vigro, Maria, save us from evil. We have 10 men by the sea to look after our ships, 14 days travel from this island in the year 1362.
That is just like a captain's log. I'm just going to chisel it into this rock. I wouldn't, and that shit happened. Is that so like if they stumbled back onto it? Like, it's such a weird thing, you know, whether this is real or not, that exact type thing was done.
Right.
And it always intrigues me. And I guess chiseling when that's what you're used to, it's not as tedious. But to me, that sounds fucking terrible.
Right. I was talking to my wife about this last night. I was like, to me, what is the biggest, for me personally, the biggest red flag here is like, these guys come back from fishing who are, I would say warriors, right? Vikings, they can kick ass. they come back and find 10 people dead. And they're like, well, I got to take time to carve this stone out. You know, my thought would be like, well, we got to get the hell out of here.
That's it. We're out of here. 1 second. Right? Tink, 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 tink. Almost. Tink, 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 tink.
Hold on, George.
Important to the story is also what was happening when Olaf Omen said he discovered the stone. So this is important too. Remember, it was back in 1898. Around America at that time, the journey of Leif Erikson to Vinland, North America, was being widely discussed as there was renewed interest in the Vikings throughout Scandinavia, meaning pre-Columbus. Fuck Columbus. You know, Erikson was here first type of stuff. You know what I mean? And now, as time, you know, this is stirred by the national romanticism movement. Now, we traveled to the lower fourth dimension too here in Chicago for a little bit more backstory. 5 years earlier, Norway had participated in the World's Columbian Exposition or the World's Fair of Chicago. Now, that's an important World's Fair. We've talked about it on here before. It was also important in like the H.H. Holmes story and all the stories that were about his murder house and stuff, which you find out a lot of that was like made up by pulp magazines and people at the time. And it wasn't as true as what is believed of H.H. Holmes and what is true are vastly separate. But that wasn't a really important World's Fair. Anyway, Norway participated in the fair by sending the Viking, which was a replica of the Gokstad ship, to Chicago, the ship that they would have sailed here in. And people love this and love the idea, Vikings in America way back then. And there's stories of Vikings, even in Native American stories, and they've talked about these blonde-haired, blue-eyed Native Americans who had entered breed. You've heard of that stuff, right?
Yep, yep.
I mean, it used to be something that they kind of was just like, well, I don't know, and now it seems to be there's more and more people that are taking it up, and they're finding that they were definitely here, not sure when, but there was a presence.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that before too, and I think it's a cool idea, and I think it's very possible. You know,
right,
but you know, you gotta have physical evidence.
Right. Also, of note, at the time there was friction between Sweden and Norway, which ultimately that led to Norway's independence from Sweden in 1905. Now, we brought that up earlier, but anyway, when the stone came out to the public, some Norwegians claimed that the stone was a Swedish hoax. And there were also similar Swedish accusations, the same way, you know, it was a Norwegian hoax because the stone references a joint expedition of those Swedes and the two nations, two peoples together at the time when they were ruled by the same king. And that was the Union of Kalmar. Now, was this all a scam or more coincidental that the stone was found among Scandinavian newcomers in Minnesota, still struggling for acceptance and quite proud of their Nordic heritage? It's kind of a coincidence that you would have, if this really was just stumbled upon by people of that heritage at a time when it's so important. Does that ding some bells to you, or what do you think?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like nationalism is kind of like a big thing. And so you're like feeling your pride about your people, you know, and you're like, got, like you said, the World Fair was there. You got the Viking ship, and everyone's kind of excited about it. And so you're like, I kind of want to jump on that meal ticket, you know?
Right. Right. I really feel it. So Aaron of the Scholars helps solve the mystery, because you can sit there and say, I found it. But people are going to have to break it down. Time to do some studying.
And real quick, I just want to say, looking at that Kelmer Union, I was reading about that. And from what I read, that actually took place in 1397 to 1533, I believe.
So that would have been previous to the which was 1362. Is that the one?
Right. 1362. And so I had read that people were claiming that it couldn't be real because of that union. But I'm like, well, that union is about 30 years off.
Yeah, right.
Just a little side note.
No, absolutely. Well, there's a copy of the inscription was made, and it was sent to the University of Minnesota, and it got to be in front of a guy named Olaus J. Breda or Breda. I'm going to slaughter these names. And I even looked up a lot of these online to pronounce them. Mm-hmm. And people argue because the way they pronounce them versus the old English pronunciation is different. And then they argued. So I'm just going to give them my shot. Some of them I started writing down and I was like, oh my God, they're arguing on the pronunciation website. So yay. Anyway, this guy, some of the names are I couldn't find the pronunciations for. So anyway, professor of Scandinavian languages and literature in the Scandinavian department, this Olaus J. Breda at the University of Minnesota, right off the bat, like one of the first people gets in front of him, and he declares the stone to be a forgery, and he published a discrediting article. That's a little bit of a right off the bat. Ugh, okay. And Breda also forwarded copies of the inscription to fellow linguists and historians in Scandinavia so they could make their own conclusion. So outside of him studying it here, they sent it there. And this is important. Here's a quote. They unanimously pronounced the Kensington inscription a fraud and a forgery of recent date. Well, shit. Meaning not only was it a forgery, it's a newer forgery. Now, there's a few reasons they felt that. We'll get into that here in a couple minutes. But that was just what they said. The stone then was sent next door to us here in the lower fourth. They went to Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. And spoiler, scholars either dismissed it as a prank or felt, and here's what they said, unable to identify a sustainable historical context, which sounds like a cop-out. What does that mean to you? Unable to identify a sustainable historical context, like as in why they would have been here or why they would have done that?
That's the way I take it, you know.
Well, I can't understand why they would have been there, so I'm not even going to judge this. That seems like a not my job.
Yes. Not my job. I'm not going to do it.
So that was your initial round of sending it out, and boom, they all kind of crapped on it. So the stone was returned to Omen with no one of academia willing to give it any credence. That was like the first undertaking that it went. Now, is that the end? Well, not so fast. We've got some people. He definitely found people willing to say that it was real. We're going to talk about that and the people that poo-pooed on that. A lot of people shitting on one another. After the break, we're going to be right back with more Hysteria 51. All right. Time to flip the script.
Let's do it.
Now, there's a cat whose name I think's Hjalmar Holland. It's Hjalmar. So that's a choose your own adventure. He was a Norwegian American historian. What did he say about it?
So he claimed that Olaf gave him the stone and Holland renewed public interest with an article claiming studies that were made by geologist Newton Horse Wichel. Yes, I got that right. From Minnesota Historical Society and linguist George T. Flom.
Yeah, he was from the Philological Society at the University of Illinois.
Who both published opinions in 1910 and gave it credence.
Yeah, they kind of said, right now, one thing you said there, this Holland said that Omar gave him the stone. There's also conjecture of that because someone else had a bill of sale that they had sold it. And he's like, no, 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 he gave it to me. So even the fact that he was coming out and saying things about this is a little bit of a, there's a side story in there that I didn't go too far into, but whether he even had the right to have it was something. But kicking onto this Winchell, this Newton Horace Winchell, this Minnesota Historical Society, he estimated that the inscription was roughly 500 years old by comparing it to weathering, with the weathering on the backside, which he assumed was glacial, so it had to be about 8,000 years old. So he's saying here these chips, the chipping that they've done when they cut into it has been weathered by at least 500 years. That puts it right in line with that 1362.
Mm-hmm.
He also stated that the chisel marks looked fresh or were fresh, but they were dated. Others said so fresh that more recently geologist Harold Edwards also noted that, here's a quote, the inscription is about as sharp as the day it was carved. The letters are smooth, showing virtually no weathering. So where he got that fucking 500 years,
right,
is what he even said in his thing. Oh, and it's really sharp. Yeah, it's really sharp. Others are saying because it's not 500 years old.
Maybe Olaf swept him a little cow's milk.
Right. Doesn't it feel like that? Like, hey, man, you scratched my back. I'll, you know, help right? me out here. Maybe. I don't know. We're also talking about this is like 1910. So this isn't too long into the whole thought process of the whole thing. Winchell also mentions in the same report that Professor W.O. Hotchkiss, the state geologist of Wisconsin, he estimated that the runes were at least 50 to 100 years old, meaning he couldn't say that they're 500 years old, but there's no way that Olaf could have made them because they were at least that old. He didn't just carve it up and then hand it over.
Right, right.
Meanwhile, Flom, that cat, found a strong apparent divergence between the runes used in the Kensington inscription and those they used during the 14th century, meaning the type of writing didn't match what they would have used at that time. Similarly, the language of the inscription was modern compared to the Nordic languages of the 14th century. Go read Shakespeare. That's English. That ain't how we talk. Right. That kind of thing. And also, now, people said, well, different dialects in different regions and things like that. But you're also talking about these are linguists. They understand that. And hopefully they've taken that into consideration. What I'm getting at is this is all over the fucking place. You know, yeah. there's people saying everything. What happened next, though?
For the next 40 years, Holland struggled to sway public and scholar opinion about the runestone, writing articles and several books.
Yeah, if you can't get anyone to do it, you just start writing about it yourself and try to figure right? it out.
I mean, that's modern day science nowadays, yeah. Man. Just put it out on the internet and anybody will believe it.
Peer review my asshole.
Right? I got reviewed by Bob down the street.
Yeah, know? That's right.
So he achieved brief success in 1949 when the stone was put on display at the Smithsonian Institution, and scholars such as William Thalbitzer, I don't know if I said that right, and S.N. Hagen published papers supporting its authenticity.
Yeah, that's a more important when the Smithsonian is saying, we want it, we'll put it here, and that's important. Mm-hmm. But you got at the same time, Scandinavian linguists, the people that are really studying specifically that, Sven Jansson, Eric Moltke, I'm not going to say any of these right, Harry Anderson and K.M. Nielsen, along with a popular book by Erica Walgren. Again, all these linguists in this book questioned the runestone's authenticity and said the language is wrong. Forget about the carvings and when they were right. done. The language is wrong. It is not proper. That's not how it would have been. So that is what that is.
That's a smoking gun to me.
It is. Now, that book that we talked about, that book by Eric Walgren, along with Walgren, historian Theodore Blagen, he flatly declared Omen had carved the artifact as a prank. And he said possibly with help from others in the Kensington area. And that is, there were a lot of the people in that area were of the same descent. And they thought that maybe they were doing that to drum up some sympathy, some attention. I don't know. Like, why would you do that if you were just that farmer out there? What's your motive?
Oh, man. Motive?
Exactly.
Yeah, why? But I do remember reading about this where he said that he had a beef with academics and stuff, and that he wanted to like make them look like a fool.
Possibly. We'll get the little peek behind the curtain there. Yeah. Further resolution seemed to come from in 1976. They published a transcript of an interview with this guy, Frank Walter Gran. This was conducted by Paul Carson Jr. on August 13th of 67, if you want to look it up. And it's been recorded on audio tape, so you can find this and listen to it if you want. Anyway, Grant said his father, John, confessed in 1927 that Omen made the inscription. Flat out said he did it.
He's a liar.
But yeah, now remember, John Grant's story was based on secondhand anecdotes. He had heard about Omen. So that's not, he didn't see it happen. He's saying, my dad told me. And the other weird thing that gives this another, just like everything else, is it was presented as like it was a dying declaration and this was his last thing. And then Gran lived for several more years and said nothing else ever about the stone. So, but if you look it up and you read, it's like this was his dying decree that daddy told me it was fake. But that's not really how it was. That's not how it came out. Then the possibility of the runestone being authentic again was raised in 1982. Like we said, it just keeps someone looks into it and goes, I want to make a name for myself. I want to figure this out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. This cat named Robert Hall, he was an emeritus professor of Italian language and literature at Cornell University. He published a book in a follow-up in 94 questioning the methodology of its critics. So that's interesting. He was like, well, if you don't believe it, I don't think you use the scientific method kind of thing. He asserted that the odd philological problems in the runestone could be a result of normal dialectal variances. That's kind of what we talked about in old Swedish of the period. So not everyone spoke the same, and then you get all these guys together and they get their own little ways of speaking kind of thing, you know. He further contended that critics had failed to consider the physical evidence, which he found leaning heavily in favor of authenticity, meaning there's a fucking rune here.
There it is.
It's gigantic rune and we have it. But again, in the book The Vikings in America, that's that book from Walgren, he say that the text bore linguistic abnormalities and spellings that he thought suggested forgery. We could go about this all day long. Those are the big ones that when you look up, these are the ones that are cited and everything, especially in that book, The Vikings in America, which is actually it goes in and explores a lot of these what ifs in a really good way of could they have been there. As far as Norse, this is something that we talked about. Norse colonies are known to have existed in Greenland from the late 10th century to at least the 14th century. And at least one short-lived settlement was established in Newfoundland in the 11th century, meaning, you know, right above us, they were there. They know that. That's the Americas. You know, they're here now. It's not America, right, as in the United States thereof. But no other widely accepted material evidence of North contact with the Americans in the pre-Columbian era has emerged yet. And I said widely accepted because I think that's in ebb and flow right now. There's a lot of people that are still now that kind of comes and goes with everything else. This interest in if the Vikings were here or not. Yep. Why is that such a tasty topic, do you think?
Well, I think now more so than ever is just with like the shows like Vikings and stuff. But then you got like people with like Scott Walter, you know, with his shows like the Holy Grail in America or whatever, and those kind of things.
Bringing it to America one way or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that actually might, you touch an interesting point there of the whole, the Grail in America and this in America and that in America. It's almost like, and you talk about nationalism and nationality, yep, and things like that. It's almost like, we want to bring, well, we're this melting pot of everything. So by God, it all came here at one point in time or another.
Right.
Truth, yeah, and evidence be damned. Now that's not exactly the case because I think there is a lot of evidence that these people from these North Scandinavian, all these people were here pre-Columbus that we probably just don't exactly know about. And hopefully one day we will, but, it gets muddy in a lot of it.
Yeah. I think it's kind of naive to think that, you know, that couldn't happen, you know, like even on the West Coast, you know, people from Asia could have totally hit the California coast or whatever, you know. I think it's possible.
Unfortunately, time's the grand equalizer and erases a lot of that stuff, you know.
It really does. Very fast.
We also don't really listen to spoken stories as much as written ones, and that's why some of the Native Americans that don't have written language, they spoke their stories, and we're quick to dismiss them. Stuff with the the star people and things like that, and these stories, and we go, well, that's not true. And like, well, okay, but we've been telling this exact same story for a millennia. But thanks, white man, you
didn't write it down though.
So yeah, exactly. Like we said before, there's, you know, with them, the blonde Indians and the blonde Native Americans, and proof pointing to it being 100% is lacking, but maybe one day. This was a mystery for a long time, the back and forth. But hold your proverbial horses. In 2010, a scholar says that he solved it. Because, and you started to talk about this, it was more, not only was it fake, it was kind of a riddle. Here's what's said. In 2010, Matt G. Larson showed in a paper something less obvious. The hidden signature of the stone's carver, who was also its finder, meaning Olaf Ullman is the one who carved it, wrote it, carved it, and was leaving it there as like a ha-ha, and it got out of hand. So what he means by that is he goes on in a full way. He deciphers the rune, but here is a translation of his summary. A link to a breakdown is in the show notes if you want to see the whole thing. He says, this was not strictly a case of forgery, but of a practical joke gone wrong through the gullibility of others. Omen himself may have been both surprised and a little disappointed to find that his hints about who made the inscription were never noted, and as time passed, it became successively more difficult for him to confess. After his runestone gained acceptance in wider circles through skillful marketing by others, not him, you remember, this thing took on a life of its own, it became almost impossible for him to come clean with his honor intact. He couldn't. So what that is saying is he wrote this as a joke. He put it out there. No one caught on. Then all these people that are looking into it, they told two friends and they told two friends and they told two friends, and this thing went crazy.
Just snowballed out of control.
Yeah. And then he's like, well, crap. Now if I say I made it, they're going to either, you know, crucify me, so to speak, or not believe you. That happens too. You see that in cases all the time. I made this as a joke. Nope. Mm-mm. I don't believe it.
I believe it's real.
Yeah. According to John Grand's son, this John Grand was Ullman's neighbor. Olaf Ullman once expressed a strong wish to write something that would fool society. This is what you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. The people, and particularly academics, towards which he was extra hostile. He didn't like them. He was a farmer. He thought he was smarter than them. Kind of in this case, he was. The end result was his prank was not, however, quite what he had hoped for, I guess you could say. Academics in the runic field were not fooled, but non-academics were. Meaning the people came forward and said this is fake, and the other people that weren't these linguists and rune and, you know, as experts said, it's real, I'll be damned, you know?
Yep.
That is something that happens all the time. I said you could read this. That is putting it into a translation app. That's what it comes out to. They break down the entire rune. It's a cipher. If you count up all the letters, it gives you a cipher. The cipher reads, the omens found, we keep collected firewood at this stone, is what it deciphers to. The omens found, we kept collected firewood at this stone. Meaning, this was just where we kept our firewood, and I made this, and no one ever figured it out until 112 years after he said he found it. Now, this cipher does work, whether he just found that and it just worked out or not. That's a hard pill to swallow. That's not what it really was.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you again. I did it already. Why make a fraud then? Well, like, do you think it was just like a screw you or what?
I think it might've been a little bit of a screw you. It could have also been like a, kind of like a money-making thing.
You know?
You might not have a lot of money back then. It could have brought tourism in to come look at it.
See the runestone. My
kids watch a show on Disney Channel called Gravity Falls, and they got a guy on there with his Mystery Shack. You know, come check out this weird thing that he made. You know, people pay to come see it, but it's supernatural to them.
The world's largest Teflon skillet, you know, the world's largest ball of twine. The world's largest orgy. That one's never usually advertised, but I mean, otherwise.
But if you think about it, I mean, it's still paying off. I mean, I see that it's at a museum in Alexandria, Minnesota. I'm sure you got to pay admission to go see it. You know, it's still generating tourism.
Yeah, it's at the Runestone Museum. It's appropriately named. Isn't that fun?
Yeah. You know, and I just find it fun that you have so many people saying that it's not real, but then you have people who are saying that it is. Even up till here recently, I just read an article on the DetroitLakesOnline.com about Scott Walker being up there because he had new evidence about the stone on October 1st. He was doing a seminar giving out new evidence about how it's real.
So there's going to be a lot of people that no matter what are going to hold on to this for one reason or another. That is where you get established science, and then you have these people that go, you know, flat earthers, you know. Now some of them fall for it because they actually believe it. Some of them, I think, are grifters. You've got to question in all of these, which side do the people fall on and why are they doing it? And that's hard to do sometimes, to understand why someone is a science denier in a lot of ways. And that's even a taboo topic to say sometimes, science denying. It's never wrong to question.
Right.
The scientific method kind of is fuck around and find out. You figure something out but you use specific steps to do so. Now, if you think that you can progress, you, the proverbial you, everyone, on anything, far be it from anyone to stop you, as long as it's ethical and safe and you know, you have the right reasons for doing it, I guess I should say. But if you are going for a specific outcome, you're doing it wrong. If you are going, I want it to be this, and so I'm going to shape it till it becomes that, that's not science.
Right.
That's just you manipulating data, and that's not how it should be. No matter what you're looking at, keep that in mind when you hire people, me included, Daryl, everyone that you're listening to, everyone. Take it for face value. Now, we're a bunch of schmucks on here just talking about nonsense that we happen to spend way too much time reading about. There's the difference. We read about the stuff so you don't have to, and we give you a third grade breakdown of it. Who would have thought that I would do a book report every fucking week? Well, I must be a masochist myself. I should have been in the car with you guys.
You would have never believed it.
It's just funny how that works out, you know, and I don't know. It's we went to AlienCon a couple of years ago, and you got booths set up, and you got these guys that are doing a great job and just talking about evidence. The other guys that just, as soon as you walk up to him, you're like, nope.
Yep.
Nope. You know, don't you get that feeling from some people that way?
Oh, absolutely. I saw a guy today that I know, and I'm like, I intentionally went the other way because I was like, nope, not doing that today.
That's the way. Oh, well, yeah. So that's the story of the runestone. And your takeaway is, well, they say there's these ciphers, but like you just said, Daryl, someone else is still saying, not so fast.
Right. Yeah. Me personally, I think it was a hoax.
I do too. I fall on the hoax side. And I really fall on the hoax side of this has gotten way out of hand and now I can't tell the truth because the truth will be more detrimental than just letting this thing, you know, play out however it goes. And then I'll die. And here we are 124 years later and still talking about it.
Here we are talking about it still. I think the hoax did its job.
Right. Yeah. A hell of a good job on that one. Right.
Way to go, Olaf.
But, you know, we don't believe in it. What do you guys believe in? Do you guys think that we're crazy on this one? If you want to let us know, hop on Facebook, search Hysteria 51. That's our Facebook discussion page. And we're going to have, I want to hear, have you guys seen it? Are there other runestones? And what other things are like this? What other things, I'd love to have a conversation, were made, do you think this was made to be a joke and it got out of hand? Because that's not this isn't the first time things like that has happened. And if you want to have us talk about any of those, let us know. Also, if you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/hysteria51pod. That's our regular Facebook page. You can listen to the show there while you are online, while you're looking around other Facebook pages and stuff. You can now listen to the show from there. Patreon, patreon.com/hysteria51, I believe. You just search Hysteria 51. You'll find us. You can find Up All Nights, Mad Blurry Hysterias. I was happy. We just did a new Up All Night on there. I got to use the one where Rhonda Shear from USA Up All Night does the intro, where she actually goes, "Hi, this is Rhonda Shear from USA Up All Night, and you're listening to Hysteria 51 Up All Night." Awesome. I can't do it, but yeah, she was awesome. I was on a show with her not too long ago, and
that's amazing.
She recorded us an intro for it. Voicemail 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. If you forget any of this junk, hysteria51.com. It's easy. Gofopedia.com. Super easy. You'll find us all there. Daryl, where can they find you? Or where can they not find you if you don't want anyone looking for you? What's going on?
Just don't look for me. You won't find me.
If you don't look for me, you won't find me. You know, what's right. More scary is if you don't look for me, you will find me. Somehow that seems like a threat. I don't know how.
I'm a private guy, so you can find me on social media, but I won't tell you where it's at.
Yeah, well, that's probably smart. Just look for gloriousbeards.org. I'm sure it's an organization. He's probably on there.
Yeah.
It just feels right. You might want
to be careful of Googling that, though.
Right, actually. If you guys want to learn a little bit more about this and see some of the translations and stuff, there are links in the show notes to all of this, and there's some videos that do a pretty good job of breaking it down in different ways. We gave you the short and sweet version because this thing goes off into a lot of tangents, and there are 1,000 other people that have talked about this and why it was or was not fake. So that's our silly thoughts on it. Daryl, thank you so much, man. This was a blast.
I mean, I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
It's always a blast having you on. So that's been our thoughts, kids. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Daryl.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.